Bolshevizing the Red Flag, a book review of Raising the Red Flag, Marxism, Labourism, and the Roots of British Communism, 1884 to 1921 by Tony Collins, published by Haymarket Books. In his 1969 pioneering work, The Revolutionary Movement in Britain, 1900 to 1921, The Origins of British Communism, reviewed in the Standard in July of 1969, Walter Kendall advanced the view that Bolshevism-Leninism was something that was alien to the formerly democratic traditions of the working class movement in Britain. Introduced from an economically and politically backward part of the world where conditions were quite different, Collins, writing as a Leninist, argues that in fact those who founded the British Communist Party were all too much in the tradition of reformist Labourism. Both views have some merit. The main constituents of the CPGB when it was founded in January of 1921 were the British Socialist Party, BSP, part of the Dealinist Socialist Labour Party, SLP, Workers' Dreadnought, Sylvia Pankhurst, and some from the Shop Stewards Movement and the left wing of the Independent Labour Party, ILP. The British Socialist Party was the name the Social Democratic Federation adopted when it amalgamated with some branches of the ILP in 1911. It was essentially the same organisation from which the SLP and the SPGB broke away in 1903 and 1904, respectively, over its lack of democracy and its reformism and opportunism. It was to provide the bulk of the original membership of the CPGB, and Collins argues its political approach too of seeing itself as the left wing of the labour movement. Collins examines the origin and practice of the founding factions and finds them all wanting in one way or another from a Leninist point of view. The defect they all, except the Shop Stewards movement, share, he says, is what he calls abstract propagandism, as opposed to seeking to lead a discontented but non-socialist majority in an insurrection against the capitalist state. The Shop Stewards movement is criticised for restricting itself to purely industrial matters, and the 1911 pamphlet The Miner's Next Step for advancing the slogan of no leaders. His view is that, on the contrary, new leaders were required, but the leaders of a vanguard party of dedicated revolutionaries. In fact, he argues that it was the absence of the subjective factor that was the reason why there was no workers' revolution in Britain just before and after the First World War. Explaining his criticism, Collins writes, "The SLP's answer to syndicalists was that a party was necessary to win a parliamentary majority, which would then support the workers as they took over industry, whereupon Parliament would hand over the state power to the industrial unions. Shorn of its industrial militancy, this was not very different from the SDF or the SPGB, who believed in the manner of the ragged-trousered philanthropists that the working class would come to socialism through being educated about its benefits and thus vote for socialists in parliamentary elections. The Bolshevik conception," Colin goes on to bemoan, "did not exist in Britain." His criticism is a caricature and tendentious in suggesting that education meant something other than the action of workers who had become socialists through their experience of capitalism, persuading their fellow workers to realise on the basis of the same experience that socialism was the only solution. It was true, though, that the implication was a majority of workers who wanted and understood socialism was needed before socialism could be established, and that if that majority existed, workers should, among other things, vote for it. The Bolshevik conception rejects the principle that a socialist majority is necessary, indeed, even possible, as it teaches that the workers can only reach a trade union consciousness and so require a vanguard party to lead them politically. Although the SPGB is mentioned in passing a number of times, as here, only one short paragraph is devoted to our political position. By this time, the SDF leadership had completed its purge of leftists, with the expulsion of the leaders of the London opposition who formed the Socialist Party of Great Britain in 1904. Once out of the SDF, its leftism proved to be a chimera, or the SPG declared its object to be the conquest of the powers of government, national and local, in order that this machinery of government, including those armed forces, may be converted from an instrument of oppression into the agent of emancipation, and pursued a grim messianic parliamentary reformism for the next 100 years and more. None of our opponents at the time, and even our honest opponents today, would have accused us of parliamentary reformism, as what characterized us was a refusal to advocate reforms to capitalism, called palliatives at the time. We did advocate using parliament, but to deprive the capitalist class of their ownership of the means of production and their ability to use the armed forces of the state to maintain it. Collins' accusation is outrageous, obviously biased and possibly dishonest. It is also ignorant. The term instrument of emancipation was consciously taken from the preamble of the 1880 program of the French Workers' Party, a preamble that Marx himself had drafted and which speaks of the working class needing to form themselves into a political party which should use universal suffrage, which thus be transformed from the instrument of deception that it had been until now into an instrument of emancipation. Clause 6 of our Declaration of Principles, which Collins is misinterpreting, is saying the same, that to end capitalism, the workers need to gain control of the machinery of government, state power, which currently upholds the capitalist ownership of the means of production. It is a call for the revolutionary, not the reformist, use of parliament. It also makes Collins a bad historian, as the views of the SPGB are just as relevant, if not in terms of the numbers who held them, to his subject of Marxism during the period he is studying, as are those of the SLP, John McLean and Sylvia Pankhurst. In fact, five of the people mentioned by him either were to become or had been members of the SPGB: Jack Fitzgerald, E.G.B. Allen, T.A. Jackson, Valentine McEntee, and George Hicks. Because he didn't bother going into the matter in detail, Collins seems to think that the SPGB favoured participation in elections and nothing else. Actually, like the SLP, the SPGB was, and still is, in favour of industrial as well as political action, the difference being over which was more important. The SLP said industrially, we said politically. Ironically, this is the position Collins himself takes up in criticising the miners' next step in the shop stewards movement, though, as a Leninist, by political action, he envisages a vanguard party staging an armed insurrection to seize state power in a period of acute industrial unrest. He doesn't list the Socialist Standard amongst the contemporary publications he looked at, which will explain how he missed that in March 1915, we published an anti-war statement by the Bolshevik representative in Britain, Maxim Litvinov, when he couldn't find anyone else prepared to do so. He also ignores, while noting that the BSP and SLP and Keir Hardie wobbled on the outbreak of war, that the SPGB immediately denounced it in a manifesto dated the 25th of August 1914. Nor does he mention that our members were among those imprisoned or going on the run for refusing to be conscripted. The two groups which founded the CPGB initially disagreed on two issues, which Collins examines in detail: affiliation to the Labour Party and participation in elections. The BSP was in favour of both. Sylvia Pankhurst was against both. While the SLPers favoured electoral action, but not affiliation, which would have been our position, but we're proud to have had nothing to do with the founding of the CPGB. In the end, Lenin and the Communist International decreed that the new party should accept both, which was easy enough to ensure, as the bulk of its members had come from the BSP, born SDF. Collins' point about the early CPGB being a continuation of the reformism of the SDF and BSP is valid, as we recognised at the time from having opposed the previous 16 years of the views and actions of those involved. However, in the mid-1920s, the Communist International decided to Bolshevise the CPGB and imposed on it a strictly Leninist organisational form, with a leadership that told its members what to do and which way to turn, and which itself took orders from the rulers of state capitalist Russia. This was, as Kendall had pointed out, quite alien to the traditions of the working class organisations in Britain. Unfortunately, it resulted in the Bolshevik conception getting established here, and in Leninist theory and tactics passing as Marxism and revolutionary socialism. As Colin's book itself bears witness, it was left to us, alone, for most of the time to keep the standard of anti-Leninist Marxism flying high.
You have been listening to World Socialist Radio, produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain. If you would like to find out more, you can visit our website, spgb.net.